Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here every week at this time, broadcasting from central London on Press TV, the voice of the voiceless. This is the big conversation. This is the great debate, and it's great to be back. This is, in fact, our 100th edition of Comment. And it happens to coincide with my son Zain al-Din's third birthday, so it's anniversary celebrations all round. You can join in the great debate by telephoning me on 44-208-601-4555, or you can SMS the show on 4478-0000-8066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. Now, breaking news, the so-called Commander Red, General Katia, the military commander who had gone over to the red-shirted opposition protesters, mainly the poor, mainly the downtrodden, who are fighting for political change in Thailand, has been shot in the head by the Thai army and seriously wounded. He is fighting for his life, and the turn of events in Thailand is likely now to be dramatically altered. This relatively bloodless, there have been some deaths, there have been some injuries, but no mass killings yet, may now take a turn for the worse. We'll be talking about that tonight. If you know what's going on in Thailand, let us know. Call the show, SMS or email us. But we'll be talking about the super settlement at Givat Yael. That's a name you're going to have to get used to, because that's a 741-acre theft of land on the West Bank by the Zionist state. And it's going to house 12,000 new settlers, illegal settlers on illegally occupied land. 741 acres, 12,000 settlers. Well, President Obama has expressed his disapproval of it, and that's to be welcomed. And he has said that Israel will be held accountable if it goes ahead with this settlement. Netanyahu, however, has said he is. So, the super settlement, indeed the continued wave of Israeli settlements across the occupied West Bank and indeed the city of Jerusalem, is one of the subjects we're going to be touching on tonight. But there's another super settlement in the air. That's the super settlement that followed, eventually, the inconclusive British general election, which left the Conservatives, the biggest party, with the biggest number of seats and the biggest number of votes, but well short of being able to form a majority government. There was much to-ing and fro-ing, as some of you will know, and the outcome is a condemn coalition, Conservative-Democrat coalition. It's a strange kind of beast. For those of you who follow football, it's a bit like supporting Liverpool and Manchester United, or Celtic and Rangers. It's a very odd collection of individuals who now sit around the British cabinet table. In fact, the cabinet's now so large that the room looks distinctly small, as perhaps you've seen sitting around that cabinet table are people who hated each other just a few days ago and, who knows, maybe still do. Will it last? What will it mean for you? These are the things that we'll be debating this evening on Comment. But I want to hear from you, particularly if you have a different point of view to mine. Your call, your text, your email will be prioritized because, hey, we want it to be a debate. Let's talk to Rene in London on that very subject of the new coalition government, the first one in Britain since the Second World War. Rene, welcome to the show.
Hello, George. How are you?
Very well. Nice to hear you. I'm glad to be back.
Good. Do you think that the coalition is in the national interest, or do you think it's just a power grab by two public schoolboys who are desperate for power? And do you really think that the Liberal Democrats will be able to influence the policies when they're supposed to be like Labour, you know, for the many, the lower classes, the poor, while the Conservatives are for the rich and the few?
Well, I certainly believe that many, perhaps many millions of those who voted for the Liberal Democrats will have been mightily disappointed when they saw the likes of Ian Duncan Smith coming out of the Cabinet Office this morning. Some of these dinosaur right-wing Conservatives, like Michael Howard, for example, have been exhumed and brought back into powerful positions in British public life because the Liberal Democrats have put them there. And many people who voted Liberal Democrat will have been voting Liberal Democrat precisely to keep these old conservative, old Etonian, Oxbridge public school toffs out of office. Of course, as you rightly say, the leader of the Liberal Democrats is a bit of a toff himself. And the new Labour leader, who's off and running and already halfway down the track before the others have even started, is David Miliband, who wasn't at a public school, but hey, he's pretty much of a toff himself. So we're going to have, it would appear to me, this is only my opinion, I want to hear yours, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, Tweedledee and a half at the top of British politics. And I don't think that any of them, or any combination of them, would make any real difference. Some people say the coalition won't last. I believe it will last, René, because there's no reason for it not to last. Such differences as existed between the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives have been abandoned by the Liberal Democrats, like real proportional representation, like the scrapping of the Trident nuclear weapons system, like a demand for an early withdrawal from the war in Afghanistan, and several other things have all been abandoned by the Liberal Democrats. So they have now got an agreement on things that they agree in common, primary amongst which is that the working people should pay for the economic crisis which was not of their making. They're going to begin within the next 50 days savage cuts in public services and savage cuts in jobs for those working in those public services. And here's a prediction, they'll increase VAT in that 50-day budget too. Let's talk to Mohammed in London. Mohammed, welcome to the show.
Oh, Galloway, how are you, Chief?
Very well, sir. Nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear you as far as my minister. My minister, I got a different view on that.
Tell me.
One view for the Labour, one view for Conservative, and one for Leave Dem. This coalition is interest to remove Mr. Gordon Brown to the office and was a favour for the Conservative, Leave Dem. Cameron. So you could see clearly and the debate and agreement, already disagreement within the party, Leave Dem and Cameron Conservative. And they disagree, especially the senior backbenchers. Because it's not the interest for the country, it's interest for the Conservative Party. And what they want is the Bush, Mr. Brown, and they got it. The people for like me who for Leave Dem, me, he let down. And I don't know what he's going to do after. I don't think this coalition will be lasting more than 18 months.
Well, unfortunately, Mohammed, they've taken precautions to make sure that that can't happen. They're going to pass a bill on a three-line whip in the House of Commons to guarantee that this parliament will last exactly 5 years and to gerrymander the British Constitution to make it impossible for a no-confidence motion to be passed in the British Parliament if they get away with it. For me, that's a coup against parliamentary democracy. It is a breach of the unwritten British Constitution and it should not be allowed to stand. I myself think it will last longer than that. I may be wrong. That's something we'll keep under review over the weeks and months. But thanks for your call. Let's talk to Peter in London on the same subject. Peter, welcome to comment.
Hi, George.
Hi.
We missed your programs over the past few weeks.
That's kind of you to say so. Thanks.
And it's nice to know you're back.
Thank you.
It seems that with the economic turmoil in Europe and the world, that people's attentions, as well as their political leaders, have been drawn away from Israel's plans on Jerusalem and the West Bank, as well as Israeli plans against Lebanon, Syria, and Iran. What I was going to suggest is that because of these situations, that everyone should try and bombard Mr. Obama with emails to register their protests against Israel's evil and inhuman actions, which comes to no surprise as the Zionists have committed terrorist acts against the Palestinians since the early part of the 20th century to clear the land of the rightful owners, the Palestinians.
Well, that's absolutely right, Peter. And one of the dreadful things from my point of view, and I want to hear yours, of course, that has occurred is that William Hague is now in charge of Britain's foreign policy. William Hague is a very aggressive, very hawkish Secretary of State indeed, particularly on issues like Iran, but is also a slavish supporter of what they call Israel. He is on record. If you look at the Jewish Chronicle, which is a pro-Zionist newspaper in Britain, if you look at the pre-election issue, you will see the three main parties, Labour, Liberal Democrat and Conservatives, taking out full page ads, paid for ads, on their knees in front of the Zionist lobby in Britain. On their knees, promising undying and absolute and total support for Israel, and hinting that they are a more dependable friend of Israel than the other parties would be. It was sickening in one way, Peter, but it was also telling, because the circulation of the Jewish Chronicle is, well, not that great, and the number of votes that it could command in the country was not that great either. But all three parties felt that they had to abase themselves before the pro-Israel position. And that's a measure of how far we've still to go in Britain. Thanks for the call. Let's talk to Miyake, I think, or Miyakel in Britain. Go ahead, Miyakel, have I got your name right?
Yes, you got my name somehow right. Thanks, George.
My apologies.
You're a great man. You're a man to be admired.
Thank you, sir.
We love you. Just to keep you on the subject, we believe that the Israelis' illegal settlement in the occupied land of the Palestinian is giving more than enough reasons to the fundamentalists all over the world. I won't call it Muslim fundamentalists because there are fundamentalists in every single religion to wage war. And everybody in this world, look, people in Europe, America, Asia, everywhere, we are suffering from terrorism. And unfortunately, some of the Muslim fundamentalists, they use this one as a reason to recruit people toward the fundamentalism.
Well, I'm actually going to the United States, God willing, tomorrow morning. And I'll be giving several speeches there. And I will underscore the point, the overarching point that you made there, which is that the greatest recruiting sergeant for fundamentalism, fanaticism, extremism, and violence is what General Petraeus called the strategic liability, his words, of the United States' total identification with the crimes carried out by the Netanyahu regime. And it's this that's fanaticizing people. It's this that's making many Muslims, particularly young Muslim men all around the world, including in our own country, more and more filled with rage at the injustice of all of this. That Israel can commit crime after crime, not be punished, but instead be rewarded for the crimes that it commits. Whilst Iran, which has committed no crime against anyone, is subject to sanctions and threatened with war. This double standard is what's driving people crazy with anger. And of course, the danger of violence is never far away. I shall be arguing that in the United States over the next couple of days. I'll tell you next week how it went. Now, let's go to Amelia in Watford on the British situation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, George. Thank you very much. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, my idea is actually, I think this government is some sort of combination of contradictions, actually, to be honest to tell you.
Mm.
And in a way, I think that basically the Liberal Democrats has, in a way, they have betrayed the aspiration of their own voters, actually. I mean, that's how I feel. And my question is, how do you think about the implication of this would reflect in international issues like Iran, Iraq, and Palestinian issues, actually. What is your, you know, what is your idea about
that? Well, not good, I'm afraid. The British foreign policy was bad enough. It's now going to get worse. And nothing that the Liberal Democrats could say, or even would say, would make any difference to that. Haig is more hawkish about the Iran question than Miliband was. Haig is more pro-Israel than Miliband was. Haig wants to intensify the war in Afghanistan even more aggressively than Miliband, his predecessor, did. So, I honestly believe that the implications will be very bad. Now, of course, the contradictions are there. The Liberal Democrats are in favor of the euro, and the Conservatives hate almost everything European. The Liberal Democrats were against Trident nuclear weapons, whilst the Tories love them more than you can imagine. The Liberal Democrats were against immediate cuts to public services, saying that that would endanger the recovery. But the Liberal Democrats have abandoned that position and will now help to implement those cuts. All sorts of contradictions exist. That's true, Amila. But fundamentally, the Liberal Democrats have sold their soul to the devil, and you can't buy it back again. And as I think St. Thomas More said, what would it profit a man to sell his soul, even for the whole world? Well, to sell your soul for a ministerial Prius, Toyota Prius, which is likely to be recalled any minute, seems a very small price for your soul indeed. Let's go to Osas in London on the same subject. Welcome to the show. Hello, Osas. Ah, we've lost that caller, unfortunately.
Hi, Galloway, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Good to hear from you. Go ahead, sir.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just want to ask you if you understand. Labour lose this election? Because if people understand that the Conservative Party is more for the rich, and I think there are more poor people in England, and how did Conservative get into power? Is it that people were hungry or frustrated about the way Gordon Brown was running things, or they don't like Gordon Brown in person?
Well, it's all those things and many, many more. The Labour government that we've had for the last 13 years had done some good things, but did many awful things and failed to do other good things that they needed to do. You take housing, for example. There's an absolute housing crisis being faced by the indigenous, white, working class British people who don't have houses or the means of getting them. New Labour built virtually no houses. So many of those people either moved to the right towards the fascist BNP, although not as many as was predicted, or stayed at home in significant numbers. The turnout in the election was half decent by modern British standards, but still millions and millions of British people didn't come out to vote. The disillusionment caused by the New Labour attack on Iraq and Afghanistan, and New Labour's attitude towards the Israeli attack on Lebanon and on the Palestinians in Gaza and so on, the attitude of New Labour to nuclear weapons, broke the hearts of many of Labour's traditional supporters, and they could not bring themselves to go out and vote for people that they regarded as war criminals and people who had betrayed everything that Labour was supposed to stand for. And some of them went to the Liberal Democrats, only to discover that the Liberal Democrats had put the Tories into power. So it's a big mess of New Labour's own making. Of course, there's false consciousness around. There are some poor people who don't identify their interests with other poor people, but somehow identify their interests with people who don't care anything about them at all. The richer and more powerful people who really couldn't care less about them, but they somehow think that by voting for that party of the rich and powerful, they might get some of the crumbs off the rich man's table. They're about to find that what's coming from the rich man's table is a big, sharp axe. And there will be a lot of pain. And that pain will be heard, I promise you. Let's hear from Abdul in London on the same subject. Abdul, welcome to the show.
Hi, George.
Yes, hello there.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about, I just wanted you to talk about the cuts which are coming.
Yes.
And the other thing was respect got wiped out. Why is that?
Well, I can't really talk about my own party. That would be an abuse of my position here in the in this pulpit. That would be unfair and invidious. So forgive me if I don't go down that road. But you can read all about it at georgegalloway.com. That'll answer that part of your question. The cuts are going to be savage indeed. The election campaign and the debates dealt with whether or not to cut just $6 billion, which would have cost 40,000 jobs in the public sector this year, or, as New Labour said, start doing it next year. That was the only difference between the parties. And the Libs at that time agreed with Labour that we should start next year. The Tories intend to start now. But it's not $6 billion they're going to cut. It's $66 billion that they're going to cut. And they announced today that most of that will be spending cuts rather than tax increases. So other than an increase in VAT, which will hit the old pensioner and the poor person exactly the same as it will hit the richest people in the land, so regressive a tax is VAT, most of that $66 billion will be cut. And some things are ring-fenced. The nuclear weapons program, for example, costing £100 billion, is untouchable. So don't even dream of cutting public expenditure that way. The wars will continue. So don't even dream about saving money. The wars are going to cost us more now because the Tories are going to throw everything into these wars. What will be cut is the Sure Start program for little children, nursery provision, child tax credits. The health service, despite what they say, is bound to suffer a significant hit. The education system, students will have to pay more for their university education. Wages will be cut in real terms for public servants, perhaps for more than 1 year, maybe 2 years, maybe even 3 years. And above all, there will be massive job cuts, massive redundancies, a huge increase in unemployment as huge numbers are shed from the public services in order to make this £66 billion cut. There's going to be a lot of pain. There's going to be trouble in this country, actually. And see if I'm right. Here's Johnny on the subject of the coalition. Johnny, go ahead. Johnny, are you there?
Yes, good, George. How are you, my friend?
I'm well, and you're welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, had a good day.
Good day to you.
Yes. I want to ask you personal. Are you Christian or Muslim?
That's none of your business. Go on to a proper question.
Okay. I want to ask a second thing. We in this country, we're living all together. Christian and Muslim, all Sikh and Hindus, right? Hello?
Yes.
And why we can't live in Islam states? We are not allowed to open church and temples or anything
well,
like that.
Well, that's an absolutely absurd point, Johnny, and somehow I suspected that it was going to. I myself celebrated Christmas Day in a Christian church in Aqaba in Jordan, an Arab Muslim country. And the bells from many other Christian churches were ringing on Christmas Day. There are millions of Christians living in Muslim countries and living, moreover, as equals and sharing the good and the bad exactly with their Muslim compatriots. So, Johnny, I don't know if you thought that was a very smart intervention, but actually it just makes you look and sound rather foolish. The second half of the show is coming up after a short break for the news headlines. Remember, you can call me, you can email me, or you can SMS me. We want to talk about the Israeli super settlement. We want to talk about the British government super settlement. And we'll keep you informed about the Red Commander, General Katia, fighting for his life now in a Bangkok hospital. I'll be back. You don't want to miss it.